Ahoy, authors! You're listening to the Writership Podcast, a show focused on helping indie authors master self-editing skills. So come aboard and get ready to find the treasure in your manuscript with hosts Leslie Watts and Clark Chamberlain.
Welcome to episode 110 of the Writership Podcast. Today, we're talking about self-editing. I'm Leslie Watts, here with Clark Chamberlain from The Book Editor Show. To learn more about the podcast, visit writership.com/podcast.
As you know, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by Jim Kukral and Author Marketing Club. Jim has just launched a new business for nonfiction authors called Business Around a Book. So if you're a nonfiction author, visit www.businessaroundabook.com and let Jim help you turn your nonfiction book into a profitable, life-changing business. That's businessaroundabook.com.
Hey, Clark.
Hey, Leslie, how's it going?
All right. It's summer, 2017. How's it going with you?
This week's pretty good. So I know that my summer has not been so great, but and I guess I've been saying that for about the whole year, but like it's had crises a few weeks ago, and just getting stuff put back together, doing trying to get healthy and figure stuff out.
yeah. So this is all right. This comes up in modern life, and sometimes things are going pretty well, and then sometimes things just seem to fall apart and are just painful and hard. And it seems to come up a lot for creatives and, people in general, I think, but maybe even more so for creatives.
I would agree with that, yeah. I think that there's something... I don't know if we attract trouble. I don't know if we just experience things differently emotionally, like we connect with things more deeply. But yeah, this was supposed to be my year. I had all these speaking engagements lined up. Everything's going great, and then just week after week after week, it's just chipping away and losing different things in my life, emotionally. Some mentally, physically, just all kinds of stuff. And it just came to a point where I couldn't, I had reached my limit, And I think one of the worst things that a person can do is feel that moment when they don't have anywhere to reach out to, or they don't feel like they can reach out to. Maybe it's too far, because that's where I was. And but getting things turned back around also takes work too, But this is, again, like you're saying, this is something we all go through. This is something that happens to a lot of us.
Yeah. So, but you had a really, really hard time recently. And yeah. What's I've always appreciated about you is the way that you take whatever and work with it and figure out a way to, to keep going and keep... Yeah. Coming out of it. And so you have a new project that you're working on that's amazing, because to me, one of the things I also appreciate about you is that you're always sharing your challenges. And when you're working on them, you're like working on them in public, which can be, that's really hard and really brave. And the cool thing about it is that you help other people, because other people realize they're not alone, and they can try the things that you're trying and make their lives better. So you're always working to improve your life, but you're also pulling other people along and helping them too. So I really appreciate that about you.
You're gonna make me choke up over here. If you don't follow me, I've only been kind of doing this on Facebook right now, and so you don't know exactly what happened. I'm honest with you. Like, I was at that point where I almost ended my life. Melissa, what you just said, I'm always figuring things out. Well, I came to a point where I couldn't figure things out, And that seemed like the only answer, and that's not the answer. And thank goodness, you know, for good people to help me to make sure that didn't happen. And so I laid in bed for 2 weeks, you know, hardly could do anything. Just was really bad there the 1st of July. And I decided, you know, I was trying to make that decision. Hey, I need to get better. I need to figure things out. And I've let my health go. I have health issues going on that are going on, and I need to get stuff figured out. And so I thought back to when Peter Turley and I did that 90-day challenge on the Book Editor Show last year, and I was like, you know what? That 90 days, that was good. You know, I was focused and everything. So I sat down and I made out my list of what I'm going to do over the next 90 days. And I was like, if I just keep this to myself, I'm probably just going to toss it. I'm going to hit one of those days and it's going to go away. So I did something that it may look like I am just all open and everything, but like I'm actually very careful what I choose to share and not share. And I knew if I did this right, or if I didn't do this right, I knew that if I did this, it would need to be shared completely and openly. And I decided to do a Facebook Live video for myself, just kind of myself to say, hey, I'm committed to this and doing this. And the reaction I got to it was incredible. I had no idea, you know, and finding other people who are always having the same issue. And so I decided that I'd do the 90-day challenge or I'm doing the 90-day challenge, but I decided I would podcast it every night, talk about what's happening. So, so we're up to day, I think today's day 10. And if you want to catch up on that, I'll have it all put together on my website, clark-chamberlain.com, and it'll have it there. It's a little bit hard to find on iTunes at the moment, but it is there. It's called either you look up Healthy Author or 90 Days to a Healthy Author is what I'm calling it, because I'm certainly not a healthy author right now. But that's kind of what's been going on and where I'm at with it.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks for sharing that here. And I know it's a little departure from what we normally talk about, but it's really important, because when you get stuck, right, that like you don't know how to get out. And so if you are stuck out there in the world, or if you know of somebody who's stuck, you know, just keep working, keep trying, find the thing that's gonna help you, because it's really important.
Yeah, it absolutely really is. And there's a lot of people out there who are willing to help, and we forget about that.
No. Yeah.
So we're a social animal, and we need that. So, but yeah, you know, you can join. You can just listen to what it is, what I've been doing, and if you feel so inspired to make some changes yourself, I'm trying to help you figure out how to do that for yourself too. So, hope you join me.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for talking about that.
Sure. Last week, you know, like all this stuff was going on and we didn't really talk about it. And I kind of felt a little guilty afterwards. I don't know, because I don't like coming off all smiley when, you know, I'm not all smiley. Anyway.
Well.
I suppose I could do a quote for this week and get this back on track.
Sure. Let's do a quote, you know, for the heck of it.
For the heck of it? All right. Yeah. So this is from Susan Bell, and she says, all writers, restrained or lyrical, avant-garde or traditional, avocational or professional, need to revise. Yet editing is commonly taught as an intrinsic part of writing, not an external tool. As such, the practice is elusive and random. It induces panicky flailing more than discipline and patience. It is vital to teach editing on its own terms, not a shadowy aspect of writing. Writers need to learn to calibrate editing's single blend of mechanics and magic. For if writing builds the house, nothing but revision will complete it. One writing needs to be two carpenters, a builder with metal and a finisher with slow hands.
Whew. truth.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been more than one time when I tell people that I edit, or tell authors that I edit, that they get a little nervous and want to take off or something like that. Editing and editors can sometimes feel a little scary. And, you don't know what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. How do I act around you? And I know there's someone I know who has worn a shirt that says, I'm correcting your grammar while you speak. And I just think, I cringe at that because it's this thing that's like, it's shrouded in mist, but it doesn't need to be.
Right.
And it's, it's so important because went through several different quotes and ideas to pull in for today. And they're all about this idea that, we have to wear two hats, that we can, once we decide that we're going to write for other people, that we have to think about those other people and not just ourselves, not just the idea that we want to present, but how do we present it in a way for our audience so they can receive it?
Right. Absolutely. And, and editing, there is a portion of it that is self-editing. After you've finished your manuscript, you're going back through it as the author and editing and putting on your editor's hat and going back to work. And then there's editing after that, that gets handed off to other people to help out with those spots, where you still need to have, you haven't learned it all yet. Because writing is a lifetime art to master. It takes a long time. And so there's different people who have better skills than others. I have to have people go through my stuff because I'm not one who corrects people's grammar because I don't care a lot about grammar. Occasionally it can bother me on sentence structuring and things like I've got to be able to read it. But that's the last thing I'm really concerned about. I'm so much more concerned with story first and grammar second.
Yeah. So we've decided that we wanted to shift things up a little today, right? So, and we're going to talk about self-editing. We're not going to look at a particular submission, but talk about some of the mechanics and some of the mindset and some of the, just what do you do? Because editing, self-editing, whatever. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was in high school and my teachers would talk about editing, they would, it was about proofreading, really. Mm-hmm. They would say, read your paper backwards so you can spot the errors. Well, that's one aspect of taking a piece of writing from the raw draft to a completed manuscript to a completed piece. But it's certainly not the only thing, and it's definitely not the first thing. So we want to kind of unpack that and demystify it a little bit. And also, we touched on this last week a little bit, was that, when do you take it to an editor? What should you do first? You should always do, I think, as much as you can, as much as you're able to do before you turn it over to someone else. But what does that mean as a practical matter?
Yeah. And, the reason for this particular episode is because we get occasional submissions that really are not ready to be read on air. Honestly, because there's just so much that needs to be corrected at the self-editing stage. And I know some people, they're coming to the United States or they're, I love the internet. I love how the internet has connected us together with all kinds of different countries. I can Skype all over the world, whatever. And you can also sell to all over the world and write to all over the world. But we have, if you have English as your second language, ESL, the sentence structuring or even idioms and like, you know, colloquial sayings and these types of things you might not get because you didn't grow up learning learning English as your native language. Just like I wouldn't know if I went over there and was trying to write a book in German. You know, I wouldn't be able to put that kind of stuff together. And so like even at some of those levels, like that's a deal where you need to do some self-editing or find someone who can help you do a little bit better to make sure that your sentences are making some sense.
Yeah. And even backing, you know, like that's one aspect of it and backing into story, because you know, what's really interesting to me, or one of many things that are interesting to me is the way that some people have like story structure and story, the art of storytelling is just in their bones and they can, you know, tell a story very easily. My son is this way and it's amazing to me. Like I want to just peek inside his brain and see what's going on in there because I don't have that natural ability. I have to really work at it. And I read a ton and I always have, but for some reason there are a lot of iterations I have to go through to produce something that's actually a story and not just a series of events that are happening to the same group of people in the same place.
Yeah, because you go out to dinner with a group of people and there might be that one person and she's just this awesome storyteller and is just so engaging and everything. And, you know, maybe you had even been where she was when that event happened. And if you tried to tell it, you know, it'd all just come out really flat.
Forget about it.
Yeah, exactly. And because I really deeply believe that as humans, story is our native language. But just like any language, there are people who can speak eloquently. There's those that stutter. There's those that can't find their voice, you know, who hold too much stuff inside, that get flustered when they're putting stuff together. And so learning from the masters, reading more, like you mentioned, and examining what it is that you've already put down on paper, you know, to improve it and to read it out loud. And how does it sound? And how does it compare to other work that's available in the same genre?
Yeah. And I think also that when we're looking at resources and that kind of thing, there's a lot of information available about, no, this is the way you should tell a story. No, this is the way you should tell a story. No, my method is the one way to tell a story. And that the fact is that there, and I've said this before, so I'm being a little repetitive, but it's important that if you have a story to tell and someone is telling you this is the way to do it, the only way, the right way, that is not true. Mm-hmm. Sorry, whoever you are who thinks that. But but I really disagree that there are lots of different ways to enter a story and to learn how to tell stories, and that it really is about finding what works for you. And so if, you know, you might have to go through a lot of different books or systems or methods to figure out what really works best for you. But do that, keep doing that. Like if you have the urge, you know, the very like deep desire to tell a story, then keep going and looking until you find the thing that, oh, right, that's a thing. Like, you know, I talk about StoryGrid a lot, and for me, it's such a powerful tool, and it helps me. It's not for everybody.
Right.
And so I don't, you know, so while I talk about it a lot, it's, you know, I would never say, oh, if you can't do StoryGrid, you can't write. Forget it. Like, No, it's not that at all. And it's funny because I unpacked it recently in a way, like thought about like, what is it? What are the aspects? What really pulled me in right away the first time I heard about it? And it's this like blue collar work ethic that goes with it that reminded me so much of just the way I grew up and the way I like to work that felt very like it, like he spoke my language, and that's what you want to find. And you, like I said, you might have to read lots of books and lots of, you know, like people's methods and learning a lot of things, but keep going. It's, you know, like you'll get a nugget here and a nugget there that'll help you figure out what your system is and how you write and how you edit and that.
Well, you know, and that's interesting. You mentioned the methods. I had a conversation, I think it must have been 2 months ago, where we were talking about acts. You know, there's the three act structure, and people talking about, oh, well, you can do a four act, or there's a five act, and all these types of different things. And I started to examine, go into these and taking a look at it, you know, or the seven pointed method, or use the hero's journey. But the funny thing is that you can take all of the methods, I'm talking Western storytelling, you can take all the methods that are out there, doesn't matter, and you can still line them up on a three-act structure. And it's the same. Like, we tell stories the same way in Western culture, you know, like what we want to have happen, because that's what we understand. And so finding a method that helps you tell that story, right? That's all it's about. You know, there's not, like, just like Wesley's saying, there's not one that's better than the other. It's the one that's right for you, you know. And maybe if the Western storytelling doesn't suit you, you know, jump over to the Japanese. Like, they have a four-act structure, and that four-act structure is actually different. It's not just like taking the second act and then dividing it into two. Like, it's a completely different type of structure where you introduce a character in the first act, and in the second act, you introduce more about the character. And in the third act, the very end, you introduce what the actual problem is. And then the fourth act, they solve the problem. And sometimes, like, the way they solve it isn't even introduced until, like, the last of the third act or the beginning of the fourth act. And instead of introducing the problem way up in the front like we do in our first act and moving into our second and, you know, having this big climax, like, it's a different method of telling story. And it wouldn't be as effective with a Western audience because it wouldn't feel right, you know, like it would take more to get into that type of a story.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. We have different, depending on there's the story you want to tell and there's the audience you want to tell it to. Mm-hmm. It's so important to be mindful of both so that you can be effective. So what you want is getting to the right place and hitting the right notes for those people. So, yeah, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, yeah, because genre, in a genre, you've got different expectations, you know. Sometimes in age groups, you have different expectations that switch between the genre, you know, and yeah, you have to understand what these are because you're not just writing for yourself anymore. You're writing for an audience. You're writing for somebody else who has expectations, who wants the same thing, only different. And so, let's talk about how to build that right.
right. Yes, right. It's that process of you go from it is Peter Turchi, and I'm always afraid I'm going to say Turley and get them mixed up. Peter Turchi, who wrote Maps of the Imagination, the writer as cartographer, he talks about how you go from being an explorer to a guide. So in explorer, you're exploring your own ideas and the story you want to tell. And then as an editor, you are working on how are you going to present that to the reader. So when we're talking about that, where do we start? What do we do? And I think, you know, you mentioned genre, like that's a great place to start because we need to know for our for the you know, if we use a meal or a dish as a metaphor, we need to know what the ingredients are that go mm-hmm. into that dish.
Right. Right. And I also, you know, love using all kinds of different metaphors. Music could be the same thing. If I go to a rock concert, it's different than an alternative rock concert. It's different than a punk rock concert. And what's different? The beat's different. You know, it's the word, you know, what they're talking about is different, these types of things. And that's what genre is. You know, it has a different, it has different ingredients and it has a different rhythm depending on what it is. And you need to understand those. One of the things that I come across often when I work, like doing a developmental edit with someone, is that they think it's a thriller when it's actually a mystery or, you know, vice versa. Like there's some that are really close to each other. And so if you try to give it to the wrong person, we'll jump over to your analogy. You know, if they ordered this particular dish, lasagna, and then you brought them out fish tacos, you know, that's not what they wanted. You know, they sat down to have lasagna and you gave them fish tacos. And so you need to understand what the genre expectations are and that your story is actually in that genre. And you're meeting those expectations.
Yeah, it's right. So where do you go to figure out those things? What's in a thriller? What's in a mystery? What are the differences and that kind of thing? You look at those stories and, you know, read them, study them. Figure out what makes them tick, you kind of, you know, which is another thing I love about the story grid, because that's part of that analysis and you're looking at and pulling them apart to see what goes into them. And, you know, watching movies is a nice way to do it quickly. Then, you know, but you also want to read the books and understand the genre and what the readers expect. Because if you don't have the things, right, then it's going to, if you have a pizza without cheese, I know it's done, but and I know there are people who don't eat cheese, and so I'm totally, there's no judgment here, but I'm a big fan of cheese, and traditionally pizza has cheese, and so if you were to order a pizza, like you say, and then you get something that doesn't have cheese on it, you would be like, oh, well, this isn't quite satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's going to leave the people feeling a little bit off.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think after you look at genre and explore and actually, you know, like compare your work to the other work, are you as good? Are you better, you know, like that's where Hemingway always said he reads everybody because he wants to be better than them, you know, not in a competition, but he doesn't want to put out the stuff that they just put out. And so he wants to have a new voice to it. And then I would say, you know, another one that you're going to start looking at through all of this is making sure that you have told the story the right way. Is the, you know, we've talked about point of view before. Did you pick the right point of view, or is the point of view changing constantly as you're writing? You know, whether you're past tense or present tense, like how are you delivering the words, you know, and how, what expectations and rules are you setting up in that first chapter, in those first few pages, that the reader can anticipate this is what the rest of the story is going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really important. And because if you change suddenly at some point, you know, later in the book, there it's going to pull the reader out of the story, mm-hmm. out of the experience of the story. And you know, and a lot of people, like if it's a great story and there's a mistake like that, then, you know, it might not be a big deal. Like they might, you know, oh, okay, whatever, but I really need to know what happens, and they'll keep going. And But you don't want to risk that, I think. And so that's the, you know. And I always, you know, too, when it comes to writing and like where you're at versus where you want to be, Anne Holly, who was a guest host a couple weeks ago, she and I were talking about books, and I said, oh, you know, do you know David Mitchell? And she said, not personally. No. but she hadn't read his stuff, and we were talking, and I said, oh, you know, try it out, and you might like it. Just knowing her and her tastes, I thought she would really appreciate it. And she wrote me after she had picked it up and started reading it, and you know, that she was loving it so much, and that, you know, when you read something that's that good, that you notice how your stuff doesn't measure up. And that can be discouraging. But of course, like, everybody starts wherever they are, and you just keep working. You know, like, don't, like, obviously, I feel like this is really, I feel like, oh gosh, if someone were telling me this, I would think, shut up. But I guess what I mean is, you know, keep reading the stuff that's really excellent, the stuff that's critically acclaimed in your genre, the stuff that's popular, just to, you know, to understand, like, what are those people doing? Those are your textbooks. Mm-hmm. And keep pursuing that excellence and in your work, because you want, right? I think if you're listening to this podcast, that you're interested in improving your writing and growing and not just staying where you're at. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start from that assumption and say that you want to, you know, like, keep reading, keep studying, keep trying to crack, like, what didn't I do well? Okay, don't use that as a way to beat yourself up or shame yourself. Like, that's a great, like, what we talked about when we talked about, back when we talked about LY adverbs, is those are an indication of where you need to work. So be grateful and you can be grumpy about it too for a little bit, but then, like, recognize that's the key. You know how to spot it. And then you know, once you know there's a problem, you can find the solution and you can, you know, keep growing and writing ever better stories.
Yeah. Cause that's what it's about. It's just, you're not, I mentioned the Hemingway thing but the only person you're honestly in competition with is yourself.
Right.
And where are you trying to go or trying to be? And I don't know if I've mentioned it here or if it was someplace else. That's a problem with talking so many places. So if I'm repeating this, I'm really sorry. But, you know, again, I would agree with Leslie that if you're here, you really care about improving your story, but you probably also are interested in being able to sell your work. Hmm. But if you're not, if you only write for you, then don't listen to me, you know, just, I don't want to say something and it's going to make you stop writing, because you need to keep writing. Like, it's a great thing if that's, you're just doing it for you. Now, if you're writing it for someone else, then listen to me, you know, and let me help you improve and let me help you get better and let me help you sell a book better and connect with your audience better, because you're not writing it for yourself anymore. You're writing it for somebody else. And then that's when you start to need to listen and you start to need to improve and you need to commit to be a professional. Even if you're still working a 9-to-5 job, that you're committed to be a professional author. And that means knowing your stuff. That means practicing. That means figuring it out. You know, it means once you've typed up your manuscript, you don't just send it to beta readers and editors. You edit it first. You know, you go through your work. You do the best that you can do. And then you're going to get better on the next one.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me, because none of us get off this out of this. There's a great series on Stephen Pressfield's blog right now where he's gotten his critique back from his editor, and he talks about the emotional mm-hmm. aspect of it and the craft aspect of it and the whole ball of wax, as they say, that yeah. you know, he's a very successful writer and he still struggles with all of this stuff and keeps working to improve the stories that he's telling, and he's a consummate professional and, you know, another person who puts it, you know, like shares the struggle. So I love that. So I wanted to mention that too. If you haven't checked out that series on the blog, then I suggest you go do that. We'll include the link in the show notes. So kind of shifting gears a little bit to like the practical aspects of what, you know, how do we, so what do, you know, we've started talking about genre. We've talked a little bit about,
storytelling
and that you need a plot, not just a series of events that happen to a group of people in a particular place, mm-hmm. that you know, your individual scenes they matter. They're in the story for a reason. They are moving the story along. They're revealing character. They're doing, you know, all the things that scenes are supposed to do and creating change within mm-hmm. the story, and that your characters are, you know, three-dimensional and realistic in that we know somebody who's like them, or we can imagine somebody who's like them, and so that's really important to look at the language that they're speaking in the dialogue, and that it's unique. And a lot of these things we've talked about in different episodes. And wow, somebody ought to put those together by topic area and have that where people can reference it. Maybe, maybe I should do that. Maybe. I would like to do that. But yeah, so it's, you know, looking at all of these things and moving them forward as much as possible.
Yeah, and you know, we have tossed out a ton of stuff here, and there are a ton of stuff in your story to look at. There's a lot of elements of story, and don't be overwhelmed by it. You know, you take it one part at a time. You know, understand what the big picture is, the overall of the story. You have that arc there, you know, and then get into the smaller stuff. I love the stuff about characters. You know, do you have a character? How do we know that your character is good or bad? Do we have another character to compare them to? You know, are you contrasting things? And yeah, like just all these are elements. So, but you don't have to do them all at the same time. You know, you just are taking things one at a time if you want to do it that way, and don't feel overwhelmed by it. This is just part of the process.
Yeah. If you get stuck, pivot. So if you're in the big picture part, this is great advice that Sean Coyne has talked about, is that if you're in the big picture and you get stuck, go micro. If you're in the micro and get stuck, go macro. So just, you know, like don't stop. I mean, sometimes we need a break, and we certainly need a break after you do a rough draft. You know, after you do a draft, you need some distance before you review again. But don't stay stuck. Pivot. Find another place to work. You know, get some advice. Read an article, like keep moving forward, because it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's not for sissies, which is a terrible word. But my point is that you know, like the author of the quote said, you need the metal of a builder, right? But, and then you also need like the patience and the attention to detail. And we're not all good at all the things because, right. like, you know, we all have our strengths and we all have our challenges. And so the idea is to find out where your blind spots are, your, you know, your challenges and what your strengths are and kind of working with those in a way to having conversations with your editor mm-hmm. about, you know, where you're struggling and try to, you know, really get underneath that. And then as I'm jumping around, one thing I want to say is too, before you engage an editor, it's so important to understand where your story, like what your story is, what is the, to have that be really solid. And it's hard if you're a new, you know, if you're new to writing fiction and you don't know what you don't know yet. And so some people, like you said, will, they'll finish and then they turn it in and it's not quite ready to be edited.
And right, because so, you know, like that's just that would cost you a lot more money. Costs the, you know, the editor a lot more work, and that it's almost akin to just having a ghostwriter. You know, like if you if you're not willing to put in that additional work in there to go through and do your self-editing portion.
Yeah, and I mean the editor can, you know, look at what you have on the page and we can do our best to kind of figure out what your intention was, mm-hmm. but we can't, if it's not there, you know, and if the author doesn't have a really clear idea in their mind of what, of, you know, if the story's not solid, if it's, you know, like looking at the plot, looking at the structure, looking at, do you have the conventions? Are your scenes solid? You don't know what you know, don't know until you know it. Right. And as, you know, as you find these things, working on them and doing them as much as you can yourself, because, yeah, as we said, you know your story better than anybody else does. And you don't want the editor, in, you know, putting ideas on your, on you, on your story. You want to, as much as possible, you know, like have it be, it's your story, it's your stuff. And the editor asks you questions and helps you strengthen things and cut what doesn't need to be there right. and add things and that kind of thing. But it's your, it's you and your story. That is coming through, not the editor's preferences about story.
Right. You know, I did an alpha read on a book that the author didn't know, really honestly didn't know what the story was about. And so I listened. I was a story listener, story whisperer. I'm sitting there listening to the story. And I'm like, okay, I think the story's, it's going one of these three ways. What did you think it was? You know, and trying to come up with what the story is really about. And then when you can have that focus, you know, this story is a, about a mystery, about discovering a person's past. You know, like if you need to be able to have a sentence and know what that story is, because then every scene you can look to see, are you adding to that? Are you solving that mystery? Are you, if the story is, this story is about a couple of people running away from the government. Is it happening in every single scene? You know, like where are those areas that, that it's just completely gone off track? You know, and how can you bring that back in?
Yeah. And I feel, I don't feel completely clear. Like, you know, like we're talking about a lot of things and we have a lot of advice and suggestions and it's all like, it's all good stuff. And I want to try to what is it?
Try to organize it.
I'm trying to, yeah, I'm trying to like, what's the takeaway? So the takeaway is, in a nutshell, obviously do as much as you can, learn as much as you can, find the right editor for you, which is not something we've talked particularly about, but we could do that in the future if that's something that people are needing. But really, yeah, getting the story solid. How do you get the story solid? That's what I'm struggling with. Is like, we're talking about a lot of topics, but I'm feeling like, at least for me, I'm not showing the how. How do we do this? Right. And maybe we should collect some resources, which I think would be great to help you, you know, to help you start working through those things. Like, what are the things that you should be looking for? What's the checklist of things right. to do before you hire a developmental editor? Before you, you know, and after you do that, then before you hire someone to copy edit the work, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It would be really great. And it could probably be in like a link to this episode and some type of mission thing, like an editorial mission.
An editorial mission would be great, I think, for this, if only we had one.
Yeah, I wish we did.
Oh, wait, we do.
You do?
We actually do. Oh, gee. Oh. I'm so silly. Okay. So what we want you to do this week for your editorial mission is interrogate your manuscript. So take it out and, you know, look at where you're at. What's the, you know, like, do you have your genre conventions? Do you have the plot? You know, is it solid? Do you need to work on it? Are the scenes working? Are your characters solid? Are they introduced well? Are they, you know, do you have an arc for your main characters? And how is the language? All of these things. And look at a book in your genre that's, you know, that's done well. And look at where, you know, how do you stack up? Not as a, oh, I suck, I'm not there yet. Don't do that. I'm not telling you to do that. What I want you to do is that see what you can work on and pick one thing that you can work on, that you can, where you can continue to grow your writing. And we'll have a better checklist and resources in the show notes. And I know, again, I'm a little late with the show notes, a lot late with the show notes, and we'll be getting those up soon. But the point is, yeah, grab that checklist and go through and figure out where you are and what your next steps are. And a reminder that you can go to writership.com/episodes to sign up and get the editorial missions delivered to your inbox. If you usually listen to the podcast, that's a good way to get that, especially this one, which will have a checklist. And so that's a great solution for that, if that's a problem for you.
And remember, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by Jim Kukral and Author Marketing Club. Jim has just launched a new business for nonfiction authors called Business Around a Book. So if you're a nonfiction author, visit www.businessaroundabook.com and let Jim help you turn your nonfiction book into a profitable, life-changing business. That's businessaroundabook.com.
Okay, Jim Kukral and the Author Marketing Club cover hosting and technical support for the podcast, for which we are so grateful. And our Patreon crew supports our time in preparing for the show. You can support us there and earn some extra rewards by visiting patreon.com/writership. Be sure to stop by Clark's website, www.clark-chamberlain.com, to find out more about his Healthy Author project and find support and resources there yourself. And if you enjoyed the show, we would love it if you'd leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you want to submit your 5 pages, you can visit writership.com/submissions. And finally, be sure to check out episodes of The Book Editor Show, which Clark hosts with Peter Turley. That's it for episode 110. We'll see you next time on the Writership Podcast.
Ready for Leslie and Clark to help you find the treasure in your manuscript? Submit your pages to writership.org/podcast.